Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast. I'm your host, Keith McDonald. Well, there might have been plenty of rotation at Anfield last night, but the Echoes got two big hitters to join me this morning. We've got Theo Squires and Paul Gorse. Gents, I trust you both well. A late night for you both last night. Gorsey, in terms of how Thursday nights goes, 4 goals, 3 points, a clean sheet and top spot in Group A. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was almost
Group A.
The perfect night, was this, Liverpool? I thought, obviously he makes the changes in the Europa League, doesn't he? Made 9 yesterday. Salah and Tsimikas, the only two who kept the place. And I thought there was plenty in there who had a point to prove, and I thought they made the point, to be fair. Particularly Harvey Elliott was excellent. Jarrell Kwanza, we're sure we'll touch on him a bit more. So he just continues to rise, doesn't he? And then Luis Diaz, you know, I thought particularly first half, he was absolutely superb. And I was thinking about Diaz as the game was going on, and I was thinking, is it a bit unfair to say he's still really waiting for his proper lift-off at Liverpool? It was coming up to his 2-year anniversary next month.
It's weird now you've said next month. That's actually accurate.
January, yeah. We're December now. He signed late January, and obviously we're in early December, but, you know, he signed midway through the 21-22 season. And then last season was marred by long-term injuries and Liverpool generally struggling. This season, he's had the obviously horrendous incident with his father being kidnapped. So, for various reasons, a lot of them not of his own making, he's still waiting for like a real, consistent, long-term run of good form. And I thought last night was a really good step in that direction towards beginning that, really. Not that I think he's been poor or anything like that, not at all. It's just there's been loads of varying factors that have conspired against them almost, but I think between now and the end of the season his kind of task is to just maintain the sort of stuff he was doing last night. You know, he took his goal really well, great header, just needs to do more of the same, and ditto for Gravenberch, really. You know, since he got that injury at Tottenham at the end of September, I think he only started one game in the Premier League, and that was at Brentford a few weeks ago. But I thought he took his goals really well, and again, like Diaz, was a real threat in the final third. So all across the board, there was loads for Ian Klopp to be pleased with. And Liverpool march on, group winners into the knockout stages and getting off to second gear, really.
Absolutely. Theo, we're starting to see the kind of success of this Europa League group in the fact that Liverpool have been able to rotate throughout. And, you know, you've got the likes of Diaz who, because of, you know, as Gorsey says, incidents beyond his control, has been out of the team recently. He's come back in, done really well. Same with Gakpo, obviously has the injury at Spurs, and he's come back in, 2 goals last night, a really good performance from him. You can throw Harvey Elliott into that as well. Tsimikas, you know, who's thriving now that, you know, Robertson's out injured. He's taking his chance. Gravenberch as well. There's so many in there that, you know, maybe look like at the start of the season they weren't in the first choice 11, maybe in the second weaker team, if you want to call it that, but they're really starting to take their chances now, and Liverpool look all the better for it, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Like, if you look back to last season when things weren't going Liverpool's way, they were having a lot of injuries. They couldn't really rotate, and there were players that were just left on the fringes, not getting a look in, like Joe Gomez, for example. But this year, it's like 21-22 again. Not then the fact that they're going on steamrolling everyone, going for all these trophies because we're still first half of the season. But they're putting in good performances, and it doesn't really matter who starts. Like, Europa League has been a blessing in the sense that they can rotate and players are grabbing their opportunities. But it certainly feels like this strong squad again. Like, Gomez is one player who's completely obliterated whatever doubt you had about him last year. The kids are doing amazingly. Like, we saw Conor Bradley come back last night. He's only a cameo late on, hasn't played since pre-season, and you can sell he's itching to make up for that lost time. He was really enthusiastic running down that right-hand side. But there's so many players here that you can say, just glad they're getting some minutes, they're not being left on the fringes. Like, Gravenberch is one prime example. Barely got a sniff at Bayern Munich last year. Wasn't starting games. He's already started more games for Liverpool than he did for Bayern. I think we can see how they benefit from having these regular opportunities. And, well, if they're in the Champions League, they wouldn't be getting as many. And you say, oh, Europa's now over until March. we're going to this really busy festive period where you need your players to stand up, you need to be able to rotate and not have any doubts about who's coming to the side. We had a little question mark over Tsimikas when he first came in, and then McAllister Endo as the holding midfielder. But the more they play, the better they look, and that certainly leaves Liverpool in good stead.
Absolutely. Obviously, I think in December, between now and January the 1st, I think it's 9 games in 30 days or so. As Theo says, that the look on your face there, it's not nice, is it?
Yeah,
I mean,
up, yeah.
Imagine playing in all those, but Liverpool have got the options that players, you know, shouldn't really have to play in most of those, you think. Maybe the goalkeeper will play a fair few, depending on how bad the injury is for Alisson. You think Tsimikas will probably play 6 or 7. You think Salah will be itching to start most of them. But apart from that, as we've just said, there's loads of different options. Does that set Liverpool up really nicely for, you know, one of the busiest months in their kind of fixtures list?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, obviously, qualifying last night made that game against Union Saint-Gilloise in mid-December. It's irrelevant, really, as the meaningless, I have to say that I said before we started recording. I think that probably the most meaningless game competitive that Liverpool have played for years. You know, when you play a game in the Champions League, when you've already qualified, there's still the monetary value of winning the game, but you don't get that in the Europa League. So,
and the only one there to win Champions League was what, AC Milan away?
Yeah.
Have they still won that?
They played Mitchell as well, didn't they, a couple of years back? Yeah. But at least you want to win them because you get a little bit of a you know, bonus for it, but you know, that doesn't happen in the Europa League. So, you know, that is going to be a real one for Conor Bradley, Kate Gordon, maybe Ben Doak, Luke Chambers. I'm going over there. I might take my boots and get on the bench at this rate.
Shows what you can do this weekend.
Yeah. So that helps, you know, given that they're playing so many games, and particularly the importance of the games as well. You know, Man United and Arsenal and the Carabao Cup quarter final as well. So, Newcastle, New Year's Day as well. So, yeah, wherever Klopp can rest and rotate and wrap a few in cotton wool, he's got to absolutely take that opportunity. So, you know, he might even look at Sunday, you know, Fulham at home. Is that a chance to do something similar? Maybe not get complacent, but it could be an opportunity for Elliot again, you know, maybe even Endo. Thought he was good again last night. And we know Tsimikas is probably going to be playing more often than not, isn't he, for the next few weeks? So, you've certainly got to look at that situation at some point and give him a rest. But I think Klopp's use of the squad has been really good in the Europa League. You know, he's made 8, 9, 10 changes pretty much each game from the previous Premier League game. And other than that kind of little stumble into lose, Liverpool have come through it with flying colours.
Absolutely. Theo, someone who had a really good game last night, I thought, and I think on social media, you know, got a really positive reaction, was Wataru Endo. Was that the best we've seen of him in a Liverpool shirt so far, would you say?
Yeah, it's up there. Like, it's difficult to judge a holding midfielder when it's a game that you're in such control. Mm. Like, as much as Lask had chances, it never really felt like they were going to properly threaten Liverpool. Like, they weren't out of first, second gear or whatever. They scored 4, and it could have been, if they really wanted to, 6, 7, 8. They knew after they get those 2 early goals, it's done. But Endo, still, when he was getting on the ball, he was moving it around quickly, and he was just doing it simple and effective. He was getting it forward, and there was one moment, I think it was in the second half, where he like skips through 3 or 4 challenges, and these players are massive, towering over him, and he's still holding off the challenges. And like, yes, that's what you want to see from your holding midfielder. That's what we've been told that his strengths are. You know, he is deceptively strong, he is deceptively good in the air. So it's good to see him playing with a little bit more confidence. Like, he's not trying too hard anymore. He's found his feet a little bit. Mm. And while you're not expecting him to start Manchester United's, the Arsenal's, the Newcastle's in the weeks ahead, he's still benefiting from having these opportunities to stake his claim. Like Gusty said, you wouldn't be surprised if he got to keep the place against Fulham, or you've got like Burnley on Boxing Day. You've got these other games where they are going to need to rotate, and he is going to have to step up. And he's certainly doing that now. You can see why Klopp was so excited when he signed him, even though everyone else was like, why have you spent that much on a 30-year-old? Like, it wasn't a Caicedo or a Lavia, but it's quietly been a shrewd bit of business here as a squad player.
Absolutely. And Gusty, one man who wasn't rotated last night was Mo Salah, his 199th goal for Liverpool. Yeah. Before I ask you both your favourite of those strikes, just a word on his season so far. Obviously, there was loads of talk in the summer about, you know, will he, won't he kind of thing, you know, the interest from Saudi Arabia. I think it's 18 goal contributions in 19 games. It really does feel like he is kind of back to his best. I think Salah at his best was the start of that 21-22 season.
Yeah.
You know, those first kind of 4, 5, 6 months, whatever.
So would you describe his 30-goal season last year?
That's just kind of... But I mean, in terms of, like, play style and just, like, efficiency, I think that was Salah at his peak, you know, the goals he'll score on Watford and Man City. Do you think he's back to that level? I mean, he's never really dropped, has he? But I think maybe getting the wider kind of appreciation that he maybe hasn't had in, you know, seasons like last year.
Yeah, well, he wasn't getting it last year because Liverpool generally went great, weren't he? He still scored 30, was it? 31, maybe?
Yeah.
I think, is there only one season when he hasn't reached 30.
Yeah, I think that was the year they won the league.
He didn't get 20 in the league that year, did he?
No.
That was like his quietest one. He got a Premier League win.
Well, he's up to 13 now already, and we've only just crept into December. So, you know, he's got to be targeting 30 again, you'd imagine. Certainly, that'll be his private thought. Yeah, he's been absolutely superb, hasn't he? You know, a different type of player this season. He's not the type when Liverpool first signed him, where he was very direct and was just going for goal more often than not. He's looking to bring in the likes of Darwin Nunes now, the likes of Luis Diaz. And I thought even before the penalty last night, he could have had a couple, couldn't he, in the first half. So Liverpool would have been more ruthless. He might have clocked up 6 or 7 last night against a poor side in Italy, but... Yeah, he's been superb. You know, an outfield that was going to score and was going to create something, that's pretty much a given. And for all the evolution of the team in recent months and over the last couple of years, he remains the main man. And I think even though he's going to be 32 in June, I think he's going to be able to do it for at least another 3, maybe even 4 or 5 years. So let's just knock all the Saudi nonsense on the head and get him to a new contract would be my... you know, thought process of I was in the Liverpool boardroom, but I think Liverpool got a massive decision to make there, and it's probably a lot closer than they'd want it to be.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'd say the Saudi stuff has helped how he's being observed from outside. Like, onlookers, you're looking at him going, there's a chance this could be the last season we see him in a Liverpool shirt in the Premier League. And that makes you appreciate him that little bit more. Like, we see the narrative for so many players. They burst onto the scene. You get really amazed by them. You're wowed by them. And then they're just consistent.
You take them for granted, I think.
They go under the radar. But then you get the wrong side of 30. You realise, hang on, we might not have long of this left. And they're still doing it. Like, I think we're sent back to Ryan Giggs when he got like Sports Personality of the Year, where he was right in his mid-late 30s. He wasn't the best player in that United team by any chance when they won the league in, 2009. But because he was at that stage of their career, still doing it, you appreciated that bit more. Now you'd love Salah to go and do what Giggs was doing in terms of still performing at that level in his late 30s at an elite club. But there's always going to be that question mark of whether Saudi come again. But as long as he's scoring goals, getting the assists, which is what he's doing, you can't really... dismiss the possibility of trying to keep him. Like, he is earning his money at the moment, and while he is the highest earner, you'd imagine when it comes to it, he'd want another pay rise. Can't say he doesn't deserve it. Just long may it continue. He's going to get his 200 sooner or later. You'd be very surprised if he doesn't get a full and put it that way.
We still gold out that one.
But you just love watching him play. Like, you could tell he was hungry to get a goal last night, the same as he was when he came on against LASK in Austria, the same as he was when he's played in all these Europa League games. He knows it's a great chance to get his level up. There's a couple of moments where his finishing was a bit lacking, or it's a tame shot or anything. But in other games or other years where his finishing hasn't been there and he's been a bit quiet, when he doesn't score, he's still setting up goals now. He could have had more than, was it 1 or 2 assists he got? There was that one pass he put in, cross to Diaz, and it's only because Diaz took a heavy touch that it let him down, and then he tries to give it to Gakpo.
Just a little bit behind him, yeah.
This playmaking we're seeing now, it's incredible to see. And like, Harry Kane got the credit for it a couple of years ago, doesn't he, when he was getting, always getting the assists and the goals. Salah's in that boat now. You just hope he's not got a future where he's departing in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, whatever. You want him here as long as he's doing what he's doing on the pitch.
I was having a conversation with someone a few weeks ago about Salah and Anfield after one of the games, and we were talking about the 18-19 season when he finished with the Golden Boot alongside Mane and Aubameyang, and we were thinking, well, Mane is in Saudi Arabia now playing in it. Let's be honest, a poor standard of the league. Aubameyang is back in France now, is he? And Salah is still, okay, Erling Haaland has come on and, you know, he's probably going to be the Golden Boot winner for the next 10 years, but Salah is still at the same level he was at 4.5 years ago, starting for Liverpool, being their main man, while so much else around him and around football has changed and altered. And that's a testament to his consistency and his professionalism and obviously his talent. So, yeah, for me, the film need to have a serious conversation with his representative at some point, because, you know, he's going to have a year left on his contract before we know it. And that could be problematic.
Absolutely. And for both of you, is the no, absolutely no price tag that, you know, he's irreplaceable. There's nothing that would tempt you to do business with him.
See, for me, it's more about who do you replace him with. You know, you can say 150 million and that's great, but who do Liverpool bring in? Who's going to be, you know, who's going to have a similar level of impact? I don't know if there is a player attainable for Liverpool. I think they'd have to restructure the way the team worked and the way they kind of played in the final third, and that might mean getting a handful of players for different positions. Given that they've already got four others in that forward line, it's not going to be a case of buying two or three with the money that you get for Salah, because there's just no room at the end, really. So they need a like-for-like replacement of similar ability, and you could probably count on one hand the amount of players who are able to do that. And you won't need too many fingers for players who Liverpool can afford. So, you know, when you weigh all that up, probably not for me, though.
Yeah.
The only one for me would be Kylian Mbappe, but, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a more nailed-on move to Real Madrid transfer in the summer.
Yeah, that's my issue with it as well. Like, if you look at like-for-like, the best left-footed forward in world football remains Mohamed Salah. There isn't anyone that's going to compete with that. And you can look at the up-and-coming ones, like the lad at Palace, Elise, the one who scored the absolute worldie of the week. At least when Liverpool signed Salah, he was banging in a lot of goals in Italy. Like, it wasn't the standard he's doing at Liverpool, but obviously it's a hard league to score in Serie A. Whereas none of the players that are younger that have been linked are getting that many. It's like 5-6 goals here. You need to be putting in 10-15 now to believe they can reach that level. So you'd have to adjust. Like, if you're not going for that like-for-like left-footed right-winger, it needs to be someone that you can still two-footed, or someone like Mbappe, or you just have to change the team completely. Like, we look at when Coutinho left, when you didn't have that number 10 anymore, you went for your fullbacks, and that can take time to adjust. You need someone who's absolutely on it and surprises you by how quickly they settle. But with Salah, it comes down to the conversations that are going on behind the scenes. If he wants to stay, then you reach an agreement. No offer is enough, as long as he's still doing what he's doing on the pitch. But if he's saying, you know what, I fancy going Saudi, I fancy being this high-profile Muslim player in the Middle East, then that's when you take as much as you can for him. He's done enough for Liverpool to decide when his Liverpool career ends, go out on that. You don't want him to go for a free transfer, but then you can always respond with that and going, well, the goals he scores in the last year of his contract, is that outweighed by what you'd get transfer fee, who comes in and replaces him, and all the uncertainty from there? Like, at least when he does go, you've got Diaz, Gakpo, Nunes, Jota have all been at the club, all settled, and then you can still say, well, Doak's going to be a couple of years older, hopefully. Kate Gordon, Harvey Elliott, maybe. Like, one of these players, you'd imagine, gets a chance in January when he's at AFCON. Szoboszlai is a chance as well. So there are options there. Maybe the player who replaces him is already at Liverpool, but no one at this stage is rivaling the goals he scores, the assists he scores.
Actually, he might be quite excited by the prospect of being the talisman for the new Liverpool team. Obviously, we know what that squad achieved between 2018 and 2022. But this is a new squad, isn't it, with the likes of Nunes and Gakpo and Diaz, and completely new midfield, and the emergence of Elliott and Jones, Kwanzaa, and Salah remains the main man. So I think, you know, knowing little bit of what we've read and what we see about the type of personality he is, I think he might be enthusiastic about the opportunity to, you know, be the kind of main man once again for a potentially great second Liverpool team under Klopp.
And it looks right to him celebrating goals with the captain's armband on his
head. Little gestures like that, you know, to some people it's a bit of a prop, the armband, isn't it? But, you know, Mohamed Salah would have felt 10 foot tall leading Liverpool out to the European game with the armband last night. Absolutely no doubt about it.
Absolutely, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't fancy one more pop in the Champions League at least. Yeah, you know. So, but of the 199, Theo, I'm going to come to you first.
There's so many to choose from. It depends what you weigh it up as. Like, the goal against United and the 2-0 where the clock's high, we're going to win the league, where you knew Liverpool were going to win the league. It's not his best finish, but it's his most iconic moment. That is the one with the shirt-off celebration that we'll always remember, because that was the day, you know, right, we don't need to be worrying about a slip up here. Liverpool are so far in front, it's going to happen. But then in terms of quality, you've got the Man City solo goal where he takes them all on, puts it in with his weaker foot, and he's done a few like that. Those are always the two that come to mind, because one, is essentially a Premier League winning goal, even if it's months in advance. And the other is he's done it against the very best side in European football. He's made them look silly. He's made it look like it's schoolyard stuff. He's just an incredible footballer. And hopefully we're going to be saying, well, his 200th is his best goal. And then his 201st, his 202nd. You wouldn't put it past him.
And go off the same question to you.
Yeah, I'd probably go for a bit more of a mundane penalty belted down the middle in Madrid in 2019, just for the importance of it. I mean, you can talk all day about some of the brilliant goals, but nearly the one against Watford, they scored pretty much...
week after, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 weeks after, wasn't it? The international break. The chip against Roma, when it was Alisson making a goal, and we know how good Alisson is in one-on-ones, and Salah's just kind of dinked it over.
But it's just, I think that was an absolute worldie as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, those two, that he was the best player in the world on that night for me back in that game. And I think they were something silly, like his 38th and 39th goal of the season. Yeah, there's loads. Chelsea, obviously, the Rockets when he cuts inside, pings that one in. The Tottenham one in 2017, was it?
Same season, yeah.
Yeah, he chinked through a few stuff away. It's just a phenomenal footballer. Probably. Steven Gerrard aside, I'd go as far as say he's the best that I've seen of the film.
Really?
And that is some statement. Yeah. And going back to last night then, there's 10 wins at Anfield now this season, or 10 games. And the last loss was against Madrid. And we know how that was back in February. I think it was like 217 days ago or something. I looked this morning, just absolutely mental.
You nerd.
I know, you've got to get the stats right. You've got to provide for the viewers. But, you know, we know how important home form is. You know, if Liverpool are to win a big trophy, I mean, you look at the run they had from 2017 to 2021, I think it was 69 games in the Premier League, something thereabouts. How important is it now that Anfield is becoming a fortress and almost got that fear factor of it? I mean, you know, now when Liverpool scored the first goal, it's almost like teams are like, well, you know, we'll just look ahead to next week and kind of pack up and get on with it.
Yeah, I think it's been a key feature of the season that's gone quietly under the radar. Liverpool have been really, really good at Anfield. You know, games like Aston Villa and Forest and Brentford have all been convincing performances, haven't they? And it's an important string to your bow. It's, Liverpool are always going to be strong at Anfield. There's no real worry there. But the fact that they're going about it in quite a quiet fashion bodes well. Like you say there, that defeat against Real Madrid in February, but before then, when did they lose Leeds? In October, into Milan in 2022. They don't lose many at all, do they? Certainly not in front of the crowd. They obviously that horrendous run at the start of 2021 that we've all tried to forget about. But yeah, I mean, under Klopp in general, they've been absolutely rock solid at home for years and years and years. It's not necessarily a new thing. It's just this season they're putting together a great run. And it was interesting that Liverpool ended Man City's run, didn't they? Winning run at home on Saturday. That was dating back from, I think, December last year, when Evan drew 1-1. 23 games, 24 games, something like that. Those are the sorts of numbers that Liverpool need to kind of aspire to if they're going to be doing something properly this season.
What impresses me as well from it is it's been a pretty naff atmosphere at Anfield so far this season in terms of what it can be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not helped that it's Europa League games. You're not going to get up for that the same way you would for a decisive Champions League game. But in the next month, you've got United, you've got Arsenal, you've got Newcastle, you've got a League Cup quarterfinal. If they get through that, then you've got a League Cup semi-final. We've got some big games coming up where the crowd will be up for it, where you will have that electricity back. And if Liverpool, it's just get an early goal, you know, oh, it's job done, I can go home now. It's not complacency there, but there's just this confidence there. And when you throw Anfield at his absolute best on top of that as well, we're going to see next level stuff from them.
So the end, one thing I've been really impressed with is how they've dealt with these kind of post-Europa League 2 p.m. Sunday kickoffs.
Yeah.
And I know they had one prior to that, the Aston Villa one, which didn't obviously follow a Europa League game, but just in general, they've been really kind of, you know, assured of how they performed on those Sundays. Loads of changes, you know, bringing some of the star players back in. We've got another one on Sunday afternoon against Fulham. You know, more of the same. The blueprint's been there, hasn't it? And it, you know, sets up a big week for Liverpool with two trips on the road to follow.
Yeah, well, that's why he's making all the changes, isn't it? You know, obviously nine last night. Was it Villa? They're not Villa. West Ham, they beaten one of them, wasn't it? The other one was a Brighton draw. Generally being good. Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Can't quite articulate why it's always so difficult for teams to be able to do okay on a Wednesday night in the Champions League and then be fine at the weekend, but in the Europa League it seems to be a bit more banana skin. I'm not really sure why that is, but
Liverpool are enjoying it because they don't have to kick up at 12:30. You get the extra hour and a half in bed.
It's probably, I mean, we know Klopp's moaned about that for years, hasn't he? And I mean, the same moment in inverted commas, it's something he's been a vocal critic of, shall we say. But yeah, they've been good, haven't they? But like we said then, you know, home record at Anfield is an important factor for continuing that run on Sunday. It's not a gimme, really, but it's one that if they're at it and the players who didn't play last night are fresh and it's, you know, as close to the first choice 11 as you're likely to get, I think Liverpool should be picking up another home win.
So, Phil, without looking too far ahead to next week, obviously we'll do a few blood reds then, but after Fulham, it's a big 6 days for Liverpool. They've got the game on the Sunday, they've got a trip to Sheffield United on the Wednesday, and then the early kick-off at Palace on the Saturday. If Liverpool have aspirations, you know, to be at the top of the league and be rubbing shoulders, you know, where they have been with Man City in recent years, is it imperative that they take, you know, 9 points over that difficult week?
It merges into one, doesn't it? All these big games coming up, but they can't take any of them for granted. They can't get complacent here. Yeah, the away form has been a bit iffy at times where they've been dropping points like at the Luton, Brighton. You need to see them getting those maximum points. But at the same time, other teams are dropping points as well. Like we've said it on a few podcasts now, as long as you're in the mix, March, April time, I think Klopp said it himself as well, that's when you go, right, we're title contenders now. You just want to keep the distance with the ties here. Like the way results could go this weekend, Liverpool could finish top of the table on Sunday. Because I think it's big games, isn't it, for Spurs, Man City. Even if not, they've got a chance of overtaking City and going into second. So you've just got to keep doing your business, focus on your own results. We saw Sheffield United in the title-winning year. That was a tough game. Palace, it seems to be a game that treats Liverpool quite well historically, but then at the same time, they always feel like a bit of a banana skin too.
Yeah, but the record at Palace is quite good, isn't
it? It's quite good. It's really good, isn't it? Yeah. But I think a lot of people remember that 2014 game. Yeah. It's a bit like Burnley. People always say Burnley's a tough one.
Because they're 3-0, don't they? Yeah.
Like, there's like two defeats and that's all there is.
Yeah, they lost in 2016.
But yeah, if Liverpool are on their game, no slip-ups, start well, they're a match for anyone. They're going to beat whoever you put in front of them. But as we saw against Luton, when it doesn't quite click, while they have the resilience to rescue something from it, it's whether they can keep doing it, whether they can keep having that fighting spirit. The fact that it was only, the Spurs game and the Toulouse game where it's dodgy officiating that's cost them at the end both times, and that's denying them an unbeaten record, shows they do have that bit about them. But you don't want to be in a situation where you're saying, oh, we should have got a draw there, or we're cursing this, because you had to come from behind when you've not been at your best. But you'd like to think Liverpool get a win against Fulham. And that's another game you can take for granted and go, oh, it's going to be an easy win because it's at Anfield and it's Fulham. But no, it's still something you've got to fight for every single point. That's why Premier League's best league in the world.
And Gorsi, you know, it feels like the early months of the season, there was so many international breaks. It was very stop-start. And especially, you know, times when Liverpool dropped points, it felt like they had to wait a few weeks or, you know, 10 days, whatever, to kind of get back out there and kind of dust off the cobwebs. Now, yes, it is a really busy, you know, 4 or 5 weeks for Liverpool, but I'm sure they'll be relishing that, you know, the fact of playing every three games. It will be testing, but it's a chance to really put a strong run together, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Liverpool are better actually when they get into a bit of a rhythm and a bit of momentum rather than kind of stopping and starting with the international breaks and whatever else. Certainly they've got the squad to deal with it now. You know, if you look back, why Klopp's been making 8 or 9 changes every Europa League game? If he'd done that in the last couple of years, you would have seen some real youngsters getting some minutes, wouldn't you? This year, it's only really been Luke Chambers started against, was it Toulouse at Anfield? And then I can't really think of too many others.
They've had a couple of starts, but that's it, isn't it? Because McConnell's only been a substitute.
Yeah. I mean, what do you consider Kwanzaa's kind of first team now? He's kind of close to that, isn't he? So they've got the squad to be able to manage a little bit of a period like this. It helps that the opposition in the Europa League is not the strongest. You know, you've got to say that. If Liverpool were in the Champions League with a Champions League group, you imagine there'd be fewer changes and maybe a little bit more wear and tear on one or two. But
you say that though, but then you'd have the changes at the weekend. Like you'd go fully strong Champions League midweek, and then you make 4 or 5 changes for Fulham at the weekend.
Yeah, but I suppose the caveat is, you know, are you able to do that as easily as you could a few years ago now in the Premier League? The Premier League now is so tough. I mean, the three who've come up aren't the strongest three who've come up from the Championship, are they? But across the rest of the league, every game is feels like top. You know, you've got the old traditional top six, as we like, and then obviously Newcastle, and then you've got teams like Brighton, Aston Villa, absolutely flying.
West Ham.
It just seems like there's a lot more quality spread across the Premier League now than ever before. And a lot of that is because of the money that's in the English game. And it makes it exciting for us as neutrals. But it means, you know, from Jürgen Klopp's perspective, nothing is ever a gimme. So, he's going to have to manage that squad masterfully over the next, 30 days? And then you get a bit of a break in January, is it? But I suppose it's just one of those occasions where they put their head down, take a deep breath and just go for it.
Absolutely. Well, there was 9 changes last night, so I'm going to ask you both for your predictions for the Sunday starting 11. So I think we can all agree on the goalkeeper, it'll be Kelleher.
Yeah.
Gorsi, I'll start with you, your back four.
Yeah, well, I bring Trent back in. I think Tsimikas pretty much is nailed on at left back, isn't he, for the next few weeks at least. Van Dijk and Matip. I was making a point last night about Konate to Doyle that it seems like he's stalled a little bit for whatever reason this season. Maybe a lot of that's been down to the form of Matip, but Matip at the moment is the first choice.
Absolutely, Theo, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like the fact that they've got the centre-back partnership for Europa and the Premier League, Matip certainly seems to have climbed up in that pecking order, and Konate's been let down a little bit by injuries over the past 18 months, 2 years. Like, he's still very young, so you expect him to emerge as that first-choice partner for Van Dijk sooner rather than later. Obviously, we know Matip's contract status is up at the end of the year, but the way he's performing at the moment, you'd say you wouldn't be against keeping him, like even if it is just a squad player again. But
he's low maintenance, isn't he? He's not going to be one of the highest earners, I think.
He's not going to kick off if he's not starting.
If he maintains this form, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer.
He's not been injured that much either.
No.
I was just about to say, 1st of January is that kind of dreaded date for people out of contracts, because he can sign pre-contract negotiations with overseas clubs. So would you be looking to give Matip a new deal?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if there haven't been at least some discussions around it. Just because of the form he's in this season. You know, you made the point about Gomez before, kind of forgetting leaving last season's worries behind him. I think Matip's in the exact same boat, isn't he? He's been excellent. You know, he's Liverpool starting centre-back at the moment. So I think you've got to take a look at it, haven't you?
And Klopp made a point in the press conference last night when he was talking about Kwanzaa, saying people saying we should have signed a centre-back in the summer. And while they didn't expect him to explode into the scene the way he has, they knew they had a good one coming through that could make up those numbers. So if you got those 5 there, even if you had 2 of them struck down by injury and Kwanzaa at the start of the weekend, you wouldn't have any issues there. You're really confident with this group of 5 centre-backs. And while it's not going to be long-term, Van Dijk's going to be pushing mid-30s, Matip's going to be pushing the mid-30s. At least you've got 3 that are younger. There will be a time where you might need a left-sided centre-back, or a left-footed one, and you can do that hybrid role a bit more defensive. At the moment, it's a really strong group, and providing they stay free of injury and the form they are in, they're certainly challenging each other to keep putting in the levels to stay in the side or get the places back. This is what you want to see from Liverpool. It's what we saw in 21-22. Like I said earlier, it's not going that Liverpool are going to win everything this year or compete for everything this year. But when this is year one of this new look side, it's definitely a step in the right direction.
I know we're meant to be picking our teams and we've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, but
it's Friday.
I think Manchester City aside, I think Liverpool, when everyone's fit and in form as they are now, they've got the best quartet of centre-backs in the league. Obviously, City can rival that with, you know, the players they've got, Ruben Diaz and Ake and Guardiola.
You throw Carl Walker in there as well, can't you, if they do the back
Stones as well.
Liverpool had a lot of issues with centre-backs last season, and with form and fitness. This season it's been light and day, and long may it continue.
Absolutely, and I think Kwanzaa has obviously been a beneficiary, hasn't he, of the Europa League. You know, if it was a Champions League, you can argue would he have been thrown in straight away, but you know, that's kind of really set him up for the Premier League games where he's been called upon. Theo, I'll chuck it over to you then, the midfield. You're starting 3 for Sunday.
McAllister comes back in, the holding midfielder. Szoboszlai's on the right. I'm going to let Graham Birch keep his place. I think he did well last night. He's a bit more powerful than Jones, and I know they've both had their rustiness with tight spells out the side, but Graham Birch has got a bit more rhythm. I think it'll take Jones a little bit more time to fully get up to speed. You could obviously say, oh, this is the game you throw him in then to get those chances, but when you've got 3 in 6 days, you're not going to have those two starting.
Yeah.
Every single one, you can have them both getting chances.
Of course, did you agree with that?
Yeah, just to play devil's advocate, I'll go with Jones over Gravenberch. So Bosley's nailed on now, isn't he? And McAllister is as well. It was another six. I thought he was really good against City, actually.
His best game, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll go with Jones just to build up that bit of rhythm that he's lost since the sending off and then the injury.
And forward line?
Yeah, I mean, Salah is Salah, isn't he? He'll be playing. Do you know what? I don't know whether I'd stick with Gakpo just because I thought he was really good last night, like I said at the top of the pod. And, you know, if he's being left out after scoring two and putting in a performance like that, there's no real incentive to perform and giving the chance. So I'll keep Gakpo in there, you know, can sit it out, and Diaz, because obviously he's no Jota.
I'd do the same thing. Like, they both scored last night. It's a chance for him to keep it. And then you have Nunes for the away games where you want something a bit more physical, shall we say.
And score predictions?
Let's go 3-0 Liverpool. Like, it's easy to sit back and go, oh, this will be a walk in the park. But Fulham got a really good result, didn't they, on Monday night? I've obviously got a bit about them. They're lacking maybe the goal scorer since Mitrovic left in the summer. But they're not exactly right at the bottom of the Premier League table. They've still got some decent players. But Liverpool, if they start well, get a clean sheet, get a comfortable win, and Salah gets his 200th goal.
I think Fulham like to try and play off from the back, don't they? I think that's how Marco Silva likes them to play. They haven't quite got to players to do it as well as other teams, so I think that could be something Liverpool will look to capitalise on from the front, and expect Liverpool to win 2-0.
Well, gents, thanks for your time today. We'll be back on Monday to review even the game against Fulham on Sunday and preview the trip to Sheffield United on Wednesday. That's all from us. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.